The Week, Nancy Crane reads from Diane Hale's new book, investigating the woman behind one of the world's most famous paintings, Mona Lisa, A Life Discovered.
A genius immortalized her. A French king paid a fortune for her. An emperor coveted her. Poets lauded her. Singers crooned of her. Advertisers exploited her. No face has ever captivated so many for so long. Every year, more than 9 million visitors trek to see her portrait in the Louvre. Like most, I stared at the masterpiece, but never thought much about its subject. Then I went to Florence, not once, but again and again. As a tourist, I explored its treasures. On visit after visit, I immersed myself ever more deeply in its culture. And almost by chance, I came upon the woman with the iconic smile. One evening at a dinner at her home, Ludovica Sebrugondi, an art historian who befriended me, mentions that the mother of La Gioconda, as Italians refer to Leonardo's lady, grew up in this very building in Via Ghibellina. The casual comment takes me by surprise. To me, Mona Lisa has always seemed nothing more than the painting in the Louvre, or the ubiquitous image on everything from t-shirts to teapots, not a girl with a mother and a life of her own. She was a real person, I ask? Si, si, Ludovica replied, explaining that Mona Lisa Gherardini del Giocondo was una donna vera, a real woman, who had lived in Florence 5 centuries ago. Mona means Madame, a title of respect. Like other women of her time, Lisa would have carried her father's name, Gherardini, but Italians call the painting La Gioconda as a clever play on her husband's surname, Del Giocondo, which also happens to be a descriptive for a happy woman. Yet the city's most famous daughter is almost invisible in her hometown. No street or monument bears her name. No plaques commemorate places where she lived. Curiosity leads me to the world's expert on La Vera Lisa, Giuseppe Palanti. Tirelessly pursuing her family's parchment and paper trail, this archival sleuth has unearthed tax statements, real estate transfers, records of baptisms, marriages, and deaths. We meet on a rooftop terrace overlooking Lisa's childhood neighborhood in the Oltrarno, the other or southern side of the Arno River. Palanti, a gray-haired, softly spoken Tuscan, cannot explain the obsession that has consumed him for decades. His wife has grown weary of her rival for his attention. His children groan at the sound of her name. But from the moment when he came upon her father's signature on a land deed, he tells me, he fell under Lisa's thrall. Soon, I would too. The very next day, I make my way to a narrow lane off Via Maggio, once the main artery leading to the gate south to Siena. Via Squazzo, meaning wallow, lives up to its squalid name. More than 500 years after the residents complained of the stench from a clogged municipal drain, the street still stinks. Graffiti smears the grimy houses that line the dank street. Trash huddles in corners. Wooden doors splinter and sag on rusty hinges. No one lingers in the gloom. No one seems to care about a girl named Lisa Gherardini, born here centuries ago, amid the clattering mills of Florence's cloth trade. The journalist in me immediately senses that the flesh-and-blood woman born on this fetid block has a story of her own, stretching deep into the past and woven into the rich fabric of Florence's history. Determined to find out more, I begin asking the basic questions of my trade: who, where, what, when, and the most elusive, why. Who was she? When was she born? Where did she grow up? How did she live? Why did the most renowned painter of all time choose her as his model? And why does her smile enchant us still? Mona Lisa was a quintessential woman of her times, caught in a whirl of political upheavals, family dramas, and public scandals. Descended from ancient nobles, she was born and baptized in Florence in 1479. The wife of a truculent businessman twice her age, she gave birth to 6 children and died at age 63. Her life spanned the most tumultuous chapters in the history of Florence. Decades of war, rebellion, invasion, siege, and conquest, and of the greatest artistic outpouring the world has ever seen. Yet dates and documents give only the skeleton of a life, not a three-dimensional Renaissance woman. I yearn to time travel to her world and see it through her eyes. And so, I decide to launch my own quest. Inhabit her neighborhoods, an art historian advises me. On repeated visits over the course of several years, I take up residence in various Florentine quartieri and stroll through the same stony streets as Lisa Gherardini once did. I genuflect in churches where she prayed. I linger in courtyards where she too may have breathed in the fragrant scent of jasmine. I venture deeper into musty cellars, abandoned chapels, antique silk mills, restored palazzi, and private libraries so deserted, I consider the dust motes in the air my boon companions. Each discovery fuels an adrenaline surge. My pulse quickens at the touch of a 16th century family history. I whoop with exhilaration when I find Lisa's baptismal record in an ecclesiastic ledger. One day, outside the home her husband Francesco once bought for their growing family, a woman's song floats from an open second-story window. Bells toll, birds chirp, centuries fall away. Bit by tantalizing bit, I feel La Donna Vera coming alive. Crinkled map in hand, I trace the route that Lisa wrote on her wedding day in 1495 when, astride a white charger, she would have crossed the heart of Florence into Medici country, the neighborhood clustered around the Church of San Lorenzo. There, in a cat's cradle of streets, I find the original beams at an inner courtyard of one of several Del Giocondo properties. An engineer leads me to number 23, Via della Stufa, the approximate location of the home that was the probable destination for Leonardo's portrait. Another day brings me to a cherished Florentine shrine, the Church of Santissima Annunziata. Heeding a friend's tip, I slip through an unmarked door next to a confessional and make my way along a row of private chapels. The dark one, just to the right of center, houses the remains of Lisa's husband and two of their sons. I kneel to trace the Latin words Familiae Iocundi, Giocondo family, on a marble floorstone. Lisa's mortal remains should lie here with her husband's, but she defied his wishes and chose a different resting place, the Monastero de Sant'Orsola, just a short block from her home in Via della Stufa. Much has changed in the city over the centuries, but the heart of Lisa's hometown has not. Hers was the urban masterpiece that thrills us still, the city of Brunelleschi's sky-skimming dome, Giotto's graceful bell tower, the Campanile, the sacred spaces of Santa Croce and Or San Michele, the slender spire of La Badia Fiorentina. In Lisa's lifetime, a galaxy of artistic stars, Michelangelo, Botticelli, Raphael, Perugino, Filippino Lippi, rivaled the heavens with their brilliance. None outshone the incandescent genius of Leonardo, who emerges from the fogs of history as more of a cultural force than a mere human being. Nothing about this artist and architect, musician and mathematician, scientist and sculptor, engineer and inventor, anatomist and author, geologist and botanist, was ever ordinary. The consummate Renaissance man sketched, designed, painted, and sculpted like no one else. He looked like no one else, too, with curled golden locks in his youth and a prophet's chest-long beard in old age. He wrote like no one else in his inimitable mirror script written backwards that filled thousands of pages of notebooks. He rode like a champion and was so strong that one biographer claimed he could bend a horseshoe with his bare hands. During Leonardo and Lisa's lifetimes, larger-than-legend characters strutted across the Florentine stage. Lorenzo de' Medici, whose magnificence rubbed off on everything he touched. The charismatic friar Savonarola, who inflamed souls before meeting his own fiery death. Ruthless Cesare Borgia, who hired Leonardo as his military engineer. Maledetti Fiorentini, accursed Florentines, their enemies hissed. Sometimes admired, often feared, never loved, Lisa's fellow citizens were vilified for, in one historian's inventory of their vices, greed, avarice, inconstancy, faithlessness, pride, and arrogance, not to mention some peculiar sexual proclivities. Even native sons decried their hometown. It is a paradise inhabited by devils, one Florentine wrote to an exiled compatriot. Leonardo would have reason to agree. Although he was known as Florentine, he was born in 1452 near the rural town of Vinci. the illegitimate son of an unmarried country girl, he might have passed an anonymous life amid the birds and horses, fields and streams that fascinated him from boyhood. Instead, his father, Ser Piero, brought his preternaturally talented son to Florence, some 30 miles away, to apprentice as an artist. Despite some major commissions, Leonardo never carved himself a niche in Lorenzo de' Medici's favored circle and spent nearly 2 decades in adulthood in Milan with his patron, Duke Ludovico Sforza, where his genius bloomed. His many accomplishments include a painting of such remarkable verisimilitude that Christ and his apostles seemed to breathe as they gathered for their Last Supper together. Then history turned on a ducat. A French invasion of Milan forced Leonardo back to Florence in 1500. Over the next few feverish years, he would join the employ of the Borgia, spar with the upstart Michelangelo, mourn his father's death, attempt unparalleled artistic and engineering feats, and suffer ignominious failures, too. Through these years and beyond, he lavished time and attention on the one portrait he would keep with him for the rest of his life, Lisa Gherardini's. Why her? Why did the divine Leonardo, at the height of his talent and renown, choose to paint someone with no title, no fortune, and no claim to power or prestige? I wonder if Leonardo, the master of sapere, vedere, knowing how to see, might have glimpsed more than what met others' eyes in this seemingly ordinary woman. A flicker, perhaps, of that indomitable spirit the family referred to as their Gherardiname, an essential, proud Gherardininess. Could this be why he chose her as his model? Not just because of a possible friendship with her husband, not just as a virtuoso display of painterly techniques. Mathematicians, citing his fascination with their field, read her as a transcription of equations and logarithms. An Egyptologist alleges that she represents the goddess Isis with the ancient secret of the Giza pyramids encrypted in her image. Or she could be, as Freud theorized, a reincarnation of Leonardo's mother, or a transgendered self-portrait, a popular 20th century view, or even a depiction of a longtime male assistant and lover, which is a consistent headline grabber of a theory. Yet the evidence that Lisa Gherardini was indeed Leonardo's model has mounted steadily. A margin note in a 16th century volume found in the last decade specifically describes and dates the portrait of the wife of Francesco del Giocondo. Some remain skeptical. Others dismiss the model's identity as irrelevant in consideration of a work of art. The Mona Lisa, I agree, remains what it is, regardless, a masterpiece of sublime beauty. And yet my quest to discover the real Lisa Gherardini has added a new dimension to my appreciation of the portrait. Once I saw only a silent figure with a wistful smile. Now I behold a daughter of Florence, a Renaissance woman, a merchant's wife, a loving mother, a noble spirit. Lisa's life beyond the frame opens a window on a time poised between the medieval and the modern, a vibrant city bursting into fullest bloom, and a culture that redefines the possibilities of a man and of a woman.
Nancy Crane was reading from Mona Lisa, A Life Discovered by Diane Hales. The book was abridged by Eileen Horn and produced by Clive Brill. It's a Brill production for BBC Radio 4.
Tales of 18th century smugglers, both male and female.
Her specialty was to go on board a smuggling ship when it had landed, take off all her clothes, and then to bind her body with the silks and laces that were being smuggled, then to put her clothes back on again. She was persuaded to give up this particular practice by her brothers when she was almost caught by a customs officer who took a fancy to her.
A new series of Voices from the Old Bailey on BBC Radio 4.
Oh, they ribbons I spy under there, my dear.
Starting on Thursday morning at 9 and again in the evening at 9:30.
On Woman's Hour with Jane Garvey in a couple of minutes, family life and the countryside, Deborah Frances White on turning the experience of tracing her family into a one-woman show called Half a Can of Worms, plus the latest from the Women's Rugby World Cup in Paris.